Today's podcast is sponsored by Howl.fm and their new miniseries, A Night Called Tomorrow, featuring James Urbaniak from Venture Brothers and Difficult People. This is a 10-part comedy noir that James Urbaniak and Azur Parsons star in. They play two Angelinos in the 50s who stumble upon an intergalactic conspiracy in Hollywood, kind of like War of the Worlds, but funny. If you want to listen to A Night Called Tomorrow and over 150 hours of exclusive Howl miniseries, as well as all of the Earwolf podcasts, including this one without ads, go to howl.fm/cracked to start a free one-month trial. Once again, that's howl.fm/cracked to get started.
How you feeling, everybody? Hope you had a nice day. Sometimes I feel all alone. Sometimes I can't get away. I feel my life is in danger every night when I lay. So can you do me a favor? Smile for me. I know they want to see me fall.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to another episode of the Cracked Podcast. My name's Jack O'Brien. I'm the editor-in-chief of Cracked, and we're listening to Smile by Vince Staples, which is sort of a angry fuck you that sarcastically tells America to smile and everything will be all right, which felt appropriate given the events of this week. And also the double standard where guys who don't smile mean business, but women who don't smile are told, smile, sweetheart, you're much prettier when you turn that frown upside down. Anyways, felt like an appropriate time to play an angry song, mention double standards. For some reason, I don't know why. This is going up the Monday of the week after Trump was elected, but we recorded this episode about a week and a half before the election. So if there's like a naive optimism you hear in our voices that seems out of place, that hadn't been extinguished yet. The election was actually why we chose this week's topic, which is, if you could travel back in time to change one moment in history, what would you do with that opportunity? I had a sense that we might have been at a point in history right there before the 2016 election that people here in the future might want to travel back to fix something if something bad happened on election day. Fortunately, I was just being paranoid. President Trump won just as we had hoped. I actually feel like there might be people who wish they could go back and take a mulligan on the election just in general. There's this graph that shows the number of Democrat and Republican voters in 2008, 2012, and 2016. If you'd asked me how many more votes Trump had received than McCain and Romney, I would have guessed at least 15% more than either of them, because according to the media, this was like a rogue wave of Trump voters nobody saw coming. But Trump actually got fewer votes than either McCain or Romney. And that's a narrative I'm not seeing much of in the media, that this wasn't a Republican uprising. This was the Democrats not giving enough of a shit to vote against Donald Trump, who, according to my Twitter feed at least, they seemed to think was a pretty dangerous guy. I just genuinely think they didn't think he was going to win on some tortoise in the hair shit. I feel like if they had been allowed even a glimpse of this, I don't know, Obama grimly shaking Trump's hand while Trump just walks around in a daze, I think that the almost half of eligible voters who sat it out might choose differently. I heard British people the morning after the Brexit vote saying they wouldn't have voted to leave the EU if they'd been able to read all the news articles about what a bad idea it was that came out the morning after the vote. Like, give us a week to think about it and let people change their vote if they want to, or decide to vote if they didn't. I feel like if we're going to destroy Western civilization, it should be because we did something spectacularly reckless on purpose. Or let's go best of seven, maybe. The NBA is more careful with how they choose a champion than we are with how we choose a president. Anyways, we don't talk about the election in this episode because it hadn't happened yet. One quick note that this was recorded, like I said, a few weeks ago, live at the Now Hear This Festival. It was actually one of the biggest crowds for a live show we've had, but they're a little muffled because it's a big ballroom, so the energy in the room might sound a bit muted compared to our typical live shows, which happen in a nice small theater. Rest assured, we're not dying a slow death up there on stage. We had a big, fun, awesome audience that were a great time. Just doesn't totally sound like it in places. But all right, with that, let's get into one of my favorite live shows we've done. I will be back at the end for some footnotes. Talk to you then. I turn my back on my friends. I turn my back on my home. I left the streets where I've grown to chase the yellow brick road. I heard they paved it with gold. I turned around and seen they pissed on it just like me. But that's all right because my soul burning. Please set me free. I hope to see you in another lifetime. Thank you guys for being here. Pasadena, all the way out in Pasadena. Awesome. My name's Jack O'Brien. I am the... What's that?
It's not Pasadena.
Pasadena. Do you believe
it's not
it?
Pasadena. It's not,
can't
it's
believe
not
we're here.
Yeah.
In Pasadena. My name's Jack O'Brien. I'm the editor-in-chief of Cracked. I'm a very bright man. And sitting next to me is my co-host for the day. He is a hilarious writer, performer, stand-up, who writes and performs and stands up at cracked.com. Please give it up for Alex Schmidt.
Hey, thank you. Hey, my God, Ventura, how you doing, guys? All right.
Detroit. Where are we? What's it called?
Anaheim.
Anaheim.
Yeah.
I always get those two confused. Perfectly natural. They sound exactly alike. So today, we are talking about, it's kind of an old question, if you could go back in time for one trip, what would you do? And we're talking about that because it's not necessarily about time travel so much as turning points in history, and we might be at one of those. We might be at the answer to when they have the now hologram, this festival in 300 years. People might be having this exact same conversation. They might be like, we need to go back to that day. And this election's a big deal is what I'm saying. I think 538 has Trump's odds currently at 20%.
Yeah, something like that. He bounced back a little bit last few days.
Which is almost exactly the same odds as a game of Russian roulette, to pick a metaphor completely at random.
I also saw the New York Times, their thing, they were phrasing Trump's odds in terms of, it's the chances of an NFL kicker missing an X yardage field goal, like a very short amount of yardage. Jesus. And I read that, and then that night, it was a Seahawks-Cardinals game that ended on that. Like, ended on somebody missing that distance. And I was like, oh, great, anything could happen. Here we go.
It's exciting, isn't it, you guys?
It's great.
So the go-to answer to this question seems to be go back in time and kill baby Hitler, which is the wrong answer for a number of reasons.
Yeah, leave him alone.
Leave that guy alone. It's the wrong answer for, first of all, you shouldn't kill babies, you guys. I shouldn't have to tell you that.
Yeah, if you're a baby killer, get out.
Also, lots of babies like look alike, and you guys don't speak German, I don't think, so you're not going to be able to, probably just going to kill an innocent baby. Also, it would be much more satisfying to kill 12-year-old Hitler, but nobody ever says go back in time. Like, you'd probably have like a little peach fuzz Hitler stash already, and it's probably like an asshole already, right? Hitler as a 12-year-old, but as a baby, just seems unsporting.
Like, wait till he like doesn't hold a door for you or something. Then you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's starting. Didn't hold that door. But it's also the wrong answer because taking Hitler out of the time stream, I don't think would solve the problems that people tend to think it would. Hitler was bad at his job. He was a dumb fellow. He was always on a lot of amphetamines because his doctor thought it helped his farts. He had a farting problem, which has nothing to do with what we're talking about. It's just a thing that I always like to bring up anytime Hitler is mentioned. Hitler had bad farts. But with regards to his leadership, it's almost like he was like intervening on behalf of the Allies. Like he, at Dunkirk, the Battle of Dunkirk, I guess Chris Nolan's making a movie about it. It's famous because 333,000 British troops got away when they were cornered by the German army. And one of the main reasons that they got away is because Hitler was like, yeah, let's let them get away. And his logic, and I need to get this right, his logic was, it's always good to let a broken army return home to show the civilian population what a beating they've had. To which his generals were probably like, okay, we'll let like five of them go. And he was like, nah, let's let 333,000 go. That'll really fuck with their heads.
It'll only be so inspiring. Christopher Nolan will make a movie out of it. It'll only be that inspiring.
Right. Yeah, and then on D-Day, big reason that the invasion was so successful was that Hitler slept in that day. As you know, he was kind of a dictator about things. No, he was actually a dictator about things. And his generals weren't allowed to act without his go-ahead. And when the attack happened, it was a surprise, and they were like, oh no. And so they were scrambling to like move all these divisions to Normandy, and they couldn't. They were paralyzed because Hitler had two policies. One, you don't do anything without Hitler. And two, you do not wake Hitler up. And that, I swear to God, that's true. This is also, it's something about dictators, because that's why Stalin died, is he had a stroke in his room, but his helpers were scared to disturb him. So they didn't like go in, even though they heard like a loud bang on the floor. But anyways, Hitler slept in until fucking noon, you guys, on the day of the D-Day invasion. So it's basically, you're taking someone out of the time stream who was like kind of actively fucking things up for the Nazis the whole time, which could be dangerous. I don't know. Do you have any reasons? You're a German, Schmidt.
German-American. I like that if he slept until noon, that means every one of us would have been more on the ball than him. We're all up. We're all here. We're all doing it. From what I've read about it, he basically couldn't let his military just do their job. The one general he was smart enough to promote and let have some free reign was Erwin Rommel, and that was just because Rommel had like worked for him directly, and he was like, oh yeah, my buddy. You know, everybody else he would just be like, no, I'm going to change our plans every day while we're invading Russia. And it was a very bad operation. There was a different guy who was in charge of the German economy that had it booming before the war. His doctor had him on drugs like morphine and strychnine on purpose. He was not ready to do a good job no matter what.
Yeah, in the last days of his life, he was like going through terrible withdrawals because we had blown up their drug making factory, and he was a literal junkie. Like he was addicted to heroin the whole time that we were fighting him in World War II. Not a cool guy, in other words.
So if you can time travel, pick something else. You know, leave the infants alone, maybe.
Right. Or at least just maybe beat the shit out of 12-year-old Hitler. So that's what we're doing today. We're giving more correct answers to that hypothetical question. And we're going to be bringing up a group of extremely talented comics, one at a time, to present their answer to you guys. And then you will be judging them with applause.
Were there any other, I think there was another ground rule for the time travel rules, right? Like it was like, just by traveling through time, we're going to say that you won't automatically butterfly effect the entire world. Because that's kind of the thing of time travel stuff, is just like, oh, you went back 2 days? Well, now you're a horse or whatever. You know, like everything. Everything's wrong no matter what. I think we're like making it so everything's reasonably okay.
Yeah. We want people to make big, bold decisions. We don't want them to be like, I'd go back and bury a sports almanac in the forest and then come back. But we do want there to be like a practical way for you to pull off your strategy. So for my answers, I just picked really easy ones. Like, wake up Jimi Hendrix. Just be like, hey, Jimi Hendrix. Wake up, buddy. And then my other one, mine are mostly focused on music. I wanted to frame Kurt Cobain's stepdad to make it look like he did heroin so that Kurt Cobain thinks heroin isn't cool. And I don't know. I feel like that was a bad influence on his life. But he was a very talented musician, you guys. I also have a really elaborate plot called the Limbaugh plot, but we'll get to that later if we have time. What's your answer, Alex?
I am a tall, thin reader from Illinois, so I think about Abraham Lincoln a lot. And I would want to save him from being assassinated. I think, like, it's one of those ones like, oh, kill Hitler, like, say, like, it's a big one. But I think it's worth doing, partly because I respect theater. You don't interrupt that with gunfire. And also, he, from everything I've read about him, he was sort of gradual in terms of making emancipation, things like that happen. But he really believed in it. Like, he wanted black people to vote and be citizens and everything. And in the years after Lincoln and before Grant was president in 1868, basically the government was just fighting with itself. Congress was trying to impeach Andrew Johnson, and he was fighting them. And if he could have just been alive and working on Reconstruction, it might have been really good. It might have helped a lot of people. And also, I figure, like, I know we're giving ourselves the thing of, like, we won't butterfly effect destroy the world, but I can see almost no downsides to it. Like, there's almost no way Lincoln being alive and finishing everything turns out badly. And, like, even if he does a bad job, like, every candidate is like, oh, what president would you be like? And they're like, Lincoln, next question, you know, because he's, like, perfect. He just did everything great and died, you know. But if he lived and he did, like, a poor job with those last few years, then he's, like, mortal, you know. Then he's somebody that, then candidates and people who want to run for office, they actually have to pick a real person and make a decision and, like, make a stance on, like, no, I actually believe in these things. So
you want to leave Lincoln alive to fuck up his second term?
Kind of, sort of. Yeah. Yeah, I want him to go around being like, all hats are named after me now, or like some dumb thing.
Yeah, he like gets a big head from
just like a real jerk.
Civil War.
And then, yeah, then, you know, America's saved.
We did kind of screw up the aftermath of the Civil War, though, so that's, yeah.
Yeah. And Grant probably would have been president almost no matter what, because he was a war hero and so on. But if Lincoln could have had those whole 8 years and then also been around to be a statesman and so on, politics might have gone better. Like, the Republican Party started fighting with itself almost right away. When Grant ran to get reelected, the two parties weren't the Republicans and the Democrats. It was the Republicans and other Republicans. It was a different set of people who ran Horace Greeley. And, like, why not just have things work a little better process-wise and maybe rebuild society better? You know? That'd help. I think that'd be good.
While we're on the subject of famous world leaders who were under the influence, Grant was drunk for most of his public life. That's kind of why he just like fell to pieces towards the end of his career. But there are like letters where Lincoln was like, he's a great general when he's drunk, and like he was like trying to quit drinking, and Lincoln was like, nah, man. Nah, buddy, you got this. So anyways, the other thing, we're going to give everybody the option to, at the end of their presentation, give a short response to being here next to Disneyland in Pasadena. We're going to allow people to talk about the worst lesson that Disney taught them, if they want to.
Do you want to get into our Disney things? I think I have one that hit me hard. Because Disney led me to believe as a child that all animated movies are going to be like a safe, wonderful romp. Like maybe some Bambi things happen or something. But otherwise, it's just going to be great. And then a different company put out a movie called We're Back, which is where, oh, yeah, we got a We're Back crowd. All right. Oh, this is my people. And it's a movie about dinosaurs are back. They're running around New York and they're having a great time. And it's really scary at the end. Like, they get imprisoned in this horrible Central Park carnival thing and, like, tormented by a madman. And I was not prepared for that. And the folks at that movie theater in Glen Ellyn, Illinois, wanted their money back. There was a crying kid throughout. So they set me up for that disaster.
I did not see We're Back, but that seems terrible.
It's
Someone was, like, audibly disappointed by the fact that I had not seen We're Back. I think my worst lesson that Disney taught me was just like to sit around and wait for shit to happen to you, like godmothers or whatever. First of all, they gave me way too high expectations for what a godmother is. I'm Catholic, and it's just like, it's just an aunt that gives you like some nice shit on the holidays. I feel like their central message is just sit back, don't do anything to like upset the status quo, and magic will happen and you're going to be fine. Like Cinderella just, you know, is a good indentured servant, I guess. And Snow White, every single decision that Snow White makes is just bad news. And then like other people just come by and like get her out of jams. Like she runs into the forest and then just like passes out while like all these like animals are around her, and then instead of eating her eyes and soft tissues like animals would, they're like, oh, you're pretty when you're asleep.
And then she's like, oh, thank God, I really dodged a bullet with that one. Here, I'm going to go pass out in this cottage where inhuman-sized things live and just assume that that's cool. She's just always passing out places, and her main gift is being attractive while unconscious. That's like her superpower. And I feel like every other type of movie, really, the protagonist has, like, agency. So thank God Jaws is my favorite movie and not Snow White. All right, let's get our first comic up, eh? Up first is one of the top up-and-coming comics, according to Splitsider.com, and Portland's funniest person, according to a contest he won. Please welcome Steven Wilbur!
Hey! The Beatles. Arguably the Michael Jacksons of music. Responsible for such classics as Everybody's Got Something to Hide Except Me and My Monkey, etc. These four mop-tops from Liverpool, England, managed to inspire generations of musicians, artists, and people who didn't want to think too hard about who their favorite band was. And then after Abbey Road, their last recorded album, which was a banger, they called it quits. They gave up. And they'd only been making records for like 8 years, which is Haley Joel Osment went from, like, he was cute longer than the Beatles were making albums. And I just think they had a couple more in their pocket that they could have worked it out and made some. So my proposal is I would travel back in time to make the Beatles produce at least three more just great albums. And I would do that by murdering every member of the Beatles. So we start in late 1969. Abbey Road had been released. They're still gonna have Let It Be come out, which was recorded before Abbey Road. And then mysteriously, while at his home meditating or learning how to play a theremin attached to a sitar or whatever, George Harrison mysteriously dies from eating a poison-filled Savoy truffle, because I am adorable. And he convulses and dies right there while his guitar gently weeps. Now, of course, John had quit the band, not publicly, a couple months beforehand. And after a grieving period, Ringo approaches John and Paul and says, "Oi, I think we should do another one. Come on, lads. For George's sake." And they're kind of on the fence about it. But then their most recent manager, a handsome devil by the name of Nigel Mustachian, says, "If we release Let It Be, that was an awful album for all of you. You hated producing that. You hated making all the songs. George even quit for a little while doing that. If you overcome your differences, try to make another album for his sake. I think you'll feel much better, and it'll be a beautiful way to pay tribute to him." So they do. They release in 1970 the album I Me Mine, which is based off a song that George was going to record but didn't. It would feature songs such as I Me Mine, Maybe I'm Amazed, and Working Class Heroes, Paul and John song. John Mendelsohn would call the album a tour de force that manages to live harmoniously between brilliantly robust, energetic offering and somber tribute to a fallen brother. And Pitchfork would retroactively give it a 2.1, calling it a stale disc of compressed bile that is by no exaggeration the worst thing to be produced by man born of woman. So it was a hit, and much like a horse that is about to be ridden by a man named Tension, Tension mounts. Paul and John are getting at it again over control of the band. It seems like they're on the verge of breaking up again. And then in 1971, at the opening of SeaWorld in Australia, not the Blackfish SeaWorld, a different SeaWorld, the body of Ringo Starr is found in an octopus's garden. It's an octopus's observation tank. He had been slowly eaten by them. So after the loss of another brother, they feel like the only thing they can do is record another album, because while their worlds are so chaotic and there's all this stuff going on, the Beatles were a constant to them, and it's the only comfort they have. So then, I should also mention, when they recorded I Me Mine, they, instead of George Harrison, they subbed in Eric Clapton, who was good friends with George Harrison, and he would get to then marry Patty Boyd when he wouldn't have to go on that heroin thing, and then probably that whole baby window thing wouldn't have happened. So, oh, you know, it's good. So then they released Blistered Fingers in honor of Ringo. The drummer they got for it was a controversial choice, Karen Carpenter of the duo The Carpenters of Dentist Office soft rock fame. She, a phenomenal drummer on her own right, but also had covered many Beatles songs in her past, and very controversial decision, given that at the time, women were not allowed to look at drums, let alone say anything. So Blistered Fingers featured songs called Imagine, you may have heard of it, a romantic version of Layla, and the last song written by Ringo Starr, Someone Help Me, I'm Being Slowly Devoured by Octopi. Robert Christgau of the Village Voice would call it a palatable and often justified effort from a band coming to terms with the recent loss of half their roster. And fake mustache aficionado Stodd Womper would write, if there ever was a perfect album for somebody who traveled back in time from the next millennium to make the Beatles create more albums, this would be it. I'm not sure why I wrote such an oddly specific sentence, let alone why I kept it, as well as this one, in the final draft. So now it's just John and Paul, and they are once again butting heads. John is frustrated by Paul constantly wanting to take control. Paul is frustrated by John taking out his grief after his wife, Yoko Ono, ran off with this mustachioed sex instructor named Judo Cool Guy. So then Paul McCartney is tragically beaten to death with a silver hammer in the middle of the street. Because why don't we do it in the road, you know? And now this is perfect. This is perfect for John because he's the only one left. He can do whatever he wants and he feels really good about this. So he comes out with the next album with the new roster, which includes Klaus Voormann, who was the designer of the Revolver album cover, but is also a very talented bassist and has known the band since back in their Hamburg days, performing clubs there. No joke, that's just what happened. So this Hamburg helper, there's the joke, assists them with the album Paul is Dead for Real This Time. Which would feature songs Instant Karma, Close to You, a Carpenters hit, and in honor of the memory of Paul, a better version of Obladi Oblada, but sung by John. Richard Williams of Melody Makers said of the album, yeah, it's fine or whatever, but this is weird, right? Can we all agree that these events are unsettling? Unsettling all the way to the bank, my friend. If there was an alternate universe where hotcakes were the most popular item to buy, this album would be selling like them. So the Beatles are still at the top of their game. They're loving life. John's feeling great about everything. And then he gets shot 4 times in the back, mysteriously. Because, really, who is this guy? Fuck him. He's talking about, like, imagine no possessions or all you need is love. But then after all his bandmates are dead, he's still making albums. This guy's a real phony, I think. Like, he's bigger than Jesus. He's not bigger than Jesus. He's just a big phony asshole. It reminds me of a book I read once. And that's what I would do.
Do you have any cross-examination questions?
You don't kill bands, like, normally, right? Like,
the thing that ruined me about Disney was,
you can just say yes or no. You could just...
Well, I don't have a time machine.
There's a lot of amazing songs there. What do you think their creative process would be like if they kept working together, you know, beyond the songs we already have in this time stream? You know what I mean? Like, what would they generate?
Like, past those three hypothetical albums? Or?
Like, as if they kept working together into the 70s and stuff.
Well, yeah, a lot of them were, like, a lot of the ones that they would do on their solo albums were actually ones that they had written previously and then bringing in. But then, of course, there'd be other ones. Probably ones about gas prices or... why America's not switching to the metric system.
You know, 70s stuff.
Their appearance on Love Boat would have been amazing, though, I think. With Charo.
Yeah, I feel like they were already kind of making solo albums. Like, the White Album is kind of just a collection of solo efforts in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and that's kind of what the best part about them was, I thought.
Right.
That they all had their own voice in these songs and they helped each other out with a little bit, but it still retained a unity. No joke there either.
Just so everybody's aware of what was on the table, we had an email thread going where people were calling out their answers, and Steven said, I'm either going to go back in time and keep the Beatles from breaking up or stop 9/11. And we can see what he went with. So,
for all I know, 9/11 would not have happened had this all went down.
That's true.
This is a lot of fucking around with time.
That's true.
Kids aren't being born because of this.
Give it up for Steven Wilbur, you guys.
I'm a fucking black beetle, cream seats in the Regal, rocking John Lennon lenses, like to see him spread eagle. Took a bitch to the club and let a party on the table, screaming everybody's famous. Like clockwork, I blow it all.
Hey guys, we are listening to Black Beatles by Ray Srummerd, or Srummerd, Ray Srummerd. It's ear drummers backwards. We're listening to this because Steven's answer was, of course, about the Beatles. And this is the best song I could think of associated with them. I'm kidding.
She's not a girl who misses much.
Now this is one of my favorite Beatles songs. It's got that thing you've probably noticed I'm a sucker for if you've listened to this podcast for a long time, where it's like three different songs stitched together. It actually was three different John Lennon songs that they all kind of worked together to turn into a single song. And it was kind of the only one like that on the White Album, which was mostly them doing a bunch of solo songs. Anyways, I do, by the way, like that Ray Srummerd song, but it's probably not quite as good or as appropriate to Steven's answer as Happiness is a Warm Gun. In case you were curious about the Limbaugh plot, it involved bringing every transcript and audio file of Rush Limbaugh's radio show back in time with me to the year before his show started. I would find and train the gayest, least white voice actor I could train to do a Rush Limbaugh impression. And that search would probably take a while. But once I found him, we'd start recording a show that was exactly the same as Rush Limbaugh's first show, word for word, but it would be aired 1 hour before his first show was to air. And we'd keep doing that until he got fired for stealing or went insane from the sheer mindfuck, since I think he does his show just like off the dome. So he'd keep being accused of plagiarizing words he thought he was making up. Anyways, after he quits, I could just use the audio files of his show themselves and a fat white guy I'd signed to an NDA who would play Rush in person. We'd wait until Rush and his conservative movement got to like peak fame and power, and then me and the gay voice actor would reveal that we were doing the show as a work of satire and that all of their beliefs were transparently false. Probably too many moving parts to guarantee that it'd come off flawlessly, so I just went with framing Kurt Cobain's stepfather. Anyways, hope you enjoy this song by The Beatles off the White Album, and then enjoy these words from our sponsors.
Mother Superior jumped the gun. Mother Superior jumped the gun. Mother Superior jumped the gun.
count the gum.
This episode of the Crack Podcast is sponsored by Indochino, the only suit company that suspends your body in frozen carbonite in order to create a flawless custom suit that fits perfectly. That might not be true, but they do make it incredibly easy for you to get a custom suit. So you look like George Clooney from Ocean's 11, or that guy from the Dos Equis commercial from the Dos Equis commercial. Here's how it works. So you can go to Indochino.com or stop by one of their 9 North American showrooms. You pick from hundreds of fabrics and patterns and customize everything from lapels to buttons to the jacket lining. And then from there, you just submit your measurements, and in 4 weeks, your suit arrives at your front door for you to wear every day like you're an international assassin or that one really cool college professor that I had. So here's the deal. This week, you guys, Cracked listeners in particular, can get any premium Indochino suit for just $389. All you have to do is enter Cracked at checkout. Once again, that's Indochino.com, Indochino, and use Cracked at checkout to get any premium suit for $389 with free shipping. This week's episode is brought to you by Loot Crate, the monthly subscription box service that sends you all sorts of awesome geek, gamer, and pop culture gear. For less than $20 a month, you get 4 to 8 items of officially licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, one-of-a-kind items, and more. So much more. Loot Crate was actually at the Now Hear This Festival, where we recorded this episode, and got my hands on their box from last month, and it was super cool. I promise you, if you like the kind of pop culture stuff we talk about on this here podcast and on the site, you're going to love when you get your monthly Loot Crate. November's theme is magic, and in it, you'll get 100% exclusive items from Doctor Strange, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, the new Harry Potter movie, and Big Trouble in Little China. They really throw you a curveball with the last one, but I'm not complaining. Big Trouble in Little China is a wonderful curveball. As you guys probably know already, there's just one simple catch. You only have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive this month's crate. Because when the cutoff happens, that's it. It's over. So go to lootcrate.com/cracked and enter code cracked to save $3 on your new subscription and help support the Cracked Podcast. Come on. You like us. Thanks, Loot Crate.
When I hold you.
Our next presenter is a comic, writer, and fashionista who is a regular contributor at Pajiba, has appeared on MTV, Comedy Central, and at the All Jane Comedy Festival in Portland. Please give it up for Riley Silverman.
So you gave us the rules of things like it won't affect your birth and stuff like, I won't let butterfly affect the world. You didn't give the rule of, hey, if you happen to be a really queer lady, you will not be like immediately thrown into an asylum or burned as a witch or just murdered straight out no matter what. I feel like that, like,
can I make that rule now?
Yeah. So barring it being like a Doctor Who episode where like Shakespeare mentions the weirdness of it and then we move on from it. Let's give myself, okay, so that's my thing. Because I think if I was given the one-way trip time machine right now, I think I would definitely go fuck the past, go to the future, and then stay there. Like, I think that would be what I would do. So I had two, the burning of the Library of Alexandria. And that was one for me as like a massive nerd. I've always grown up with that as like a symbol of lost knowledge. Like that was always the idea. Like, so those of you guys who don't know, the Library of Alexandria was a library in Alexandria, and it was this really massive tome of all the knowledge in the world at that time. Basically, every single time a ship came into Alexandria, they would like seize all the books on the ship, or scrolls at the time, give them to somebody in the library to copy, and then they would give the copy back to the ships they took them from and store the originals. And then they also, like, if they had, like, multiple copies of a book, they would, like, compare them all and find out, like, which one was, like, the most common piece of all information, like, what had the right information in it. And then that would be, like, the original canon. Like, that was the canon of knowledge. And then it was, like, famously burned down, and people lament it to this day about what knowledge was lost in it. But then when I was researching it for this piece, like, a lot of, like, what I've always learned about it is kind of, like, even what I just said right there, like, it was run by the Ptolemaic Greeks and then the Romans, which were, like, the empires of the time. And you think about it, that means that what the Library of Alexandria was, like, if the government had total control over the internet. Because if everybody who's coming to you is having their books handed over and then given copies back, like, you have no idea if one of those scholars changed information in those scrolls. So it's basically like this government now gets to control all the information in the world, and they get to say, here's the canon. Like, this is the official record of what these facts are. So that's one major problem with it. And then the other one is that it turns out that there is not a single burning of the Library of Alexandria. It's not this one thing that if you stop it, you create a like a utopian future where we all live on the moon now because knowledge wasn't destroyed. Right. It turns out it was like the one of the first major burnings of it was when Julius Caesar was besieged in Alexandria, and he burned his own ships for some reason, because that's what Caesar did. That's how he rolls. Then, like, it caught the library on fire. And it turns out that, like, the time that's, like, famously referred to it as probably never actually happened, because I have it here. The time that's like the famous burning of it supposedly happened centuries later during like the Dark Ages, basically, like more common era. And it was said to have been destroyed by a Muslim army that, like, basically their argument was that, like, if the knowledge in the library wasn't from the Quran, then it was like didn't deserve to exist. And if it wasn't the Quran, then it didn't need to be recopied. So they burned it all down. But that's like centuries after this library was relevant and had burned a lot. So I think what we've found out is that the burning of Library of Alexandria is actually one of the earliest cases of like blatant Islamophobia for like political reasons. Like the fact that I think of it as like a tragic loss means that like I have been convinced by like the middle-aged Trump. Like that's what happened. Like the library burning is an episode of Real Time with Bill Maher that's lasted for like centuries. So I gave up on that one. So the other one that I had was what I think is the real killing baby Hitler. Because killing baby Hitler is a dick move. You're right. Like, it's a baby. Like, let the baby do what he's going to do. And also, I'm getting somewhere with it. Just relax. The thing is that baby Hitler is not guilty of anything. Like, he's a baby living in a, like, World War I hasn't even happened yet. And if you actually read writings from Hitler in World War I, like, he's just a soldier. Like, I'm sure it's very anti-Semitic because it was still Europe in this time period. But he's just a soldier who is actually kind of affected by the war. And then after the war, there's this awful, there's this huge public German propaganda campaign to blame the loss of Germany on corrupt politicians, like saying there's this whole myth that the German army was never defeated in the field and the politicians gave them up and betrayed them and that screwed their economy up or whatever. So, like, if you get rid of Hitler, like, World War II, like I said, would have happened probably anyway, maybe in a different form with a better general. But what if you stop World War I from happening? Because World War II is really just a continuation of it's like the reconstruction of the South. Like, Europe was so fucked over by the end of World War I that there's so much tension that World War II happens. So World War I can actually be prevented without any bloodshed. Because literally the beginning of World War I is the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand, Franz Ferdinand, the great, awesome alternative rock band, so you'd be a fan of that. And it's a freak assassination. Like, they had a plot. The assassination of Ferdinand is such a weird thing that happened that it's almost like somebody tried to stop it with time travel and then history course-corrected itself. Because there was like a whole plot with like a bunch of Serbian like nationalists who had bombs on the road, whatever, and the bomb went off, did not kill the Duke, and then kind of like the conspirators like go off on their own and like whatever, and like they disband trying to hide. And then the Archduke was like going down a road with his driver, and Gavrilo Princip, his assassinator, just happened to be like at a diner. It'd be like if in the Civil War, if Booth couldn't have gotten into the theater and then he ran into Lincoln at a McDonald's. Like, that's what happened. Pinsip's just like walking down the street, looks over the corner, oh my God, that's the guy we're trying to kill, boom, he's dead. That's how it happened, and that's why World War I, all these alliances started falling into place. Germany's like, oh God, we're going to have to go to war because of our alliances, so let's just attack everybody the fuck right now. And that's what they did. So all of that doesn't happen. And to unfortunately break your butterfly effect rule, I think the fear of changing that moment is that you literally do change the entire 20th century. If you stop that one, and you don't even have to kill anybody, you can literally just like make Princip wait a little bit longer in line to pay for his sandwich. Like that's
right.
Like you can just literally like tell Ferdinand's group, like, hey, maybe don't go down that road. Like maybe right. Don't do that. Maybe you were just almost assassinated. Maybe there's somebody in this town still trying to do
right.
it. How about you chill or put like some like
well, his choice was like so weird. He was on his way to the hospital to console the people who had
the guards who had died
earlier,
yeah.
And they made a wrong turn down a street.
Yeah.
Princip walks out of the diner, and then their car stalls
yeah.
right in front of him. It's like, what the fuck?
So just give him a GPS that goes a different route,
right, exactly.
And you stop World War I. But the thing is, so World War I, though, prior to World War I, war was kind of seen as this like glorious thing. Like it was like a very Teddy Roosevelt view of war as being like the ultimate test of human like ability. Whereas World War I then turned it into this like horrific meat grinder and really changed the entire view of war as this like chaotic thing, which maybe is better because it makes us not want to go to war, but we have to go through a shit ton of war first before we get to that point. And you could argue that World War I would have happened no matter what happened because there was so much tension and so much issues in the world that would have been a powder keg anyway, but I don't think that's necessarily true because powder kegs are stopped all the time. Like the Cuban Missile Crisis is a good example of where an inevitable war never actually happens if the right things happen. So I do wonder, but if you get rid of World War I, there's a really good chance that the aggressor of the 20th century would be overtly America, because America was very much getting our fingers into imperialism at the time. And like we definitely still did it, but we're more subtle about it. Like we're helping spread democracy by overthrowing democracies. But anyway, that might have happened. The UK might have remained a very strong monarchy because they really lost their empire during World War II especially. But then also, I don't think the Russian Tsar would have fallen because so much of what happened in Russia happened as a result of the hardships of the war. So I think that if you stop World War I, you may actually solidify monarchy as a legitimate government institution for the 20th century. And our technology might not have been as good as it is now because so much of what we developed came through war. So it's just interesting that you think, like, everyone's always like, oh, don't kill baby Hitler. But if you stop that assassination, that is the defining moment, I think, of the entire century.
Absolutely.
But we also might not have YouTube comments, so it might be a wash.
Yeah.
So those are my two things. And then the way Disney ruined my childhood was that I went on a trip to Disney in, like, my middle school era, and we stayed at the Beach Club Yacht Club Hotel in Florida, and it was the best week. And then they made us leave. Like, we weren't paying for the room anymore. And they were like, no, you have to go home. You can't stay here forever. And then that's when Disney taught me that happiness is fleeting, and actually aww. Tasting happiness and then being ripped apart from it is way worse than just never being happy at all.
I hope there are children here, like, on a Disney vacation.
I swore a few times. I hope there's not children here.
Yeah.
That's my history.
You guys have anything?
Yeah.
I just can't stop thinking about a little baby Hitler goose stepping, but that's...
It's adorable.
It is kind of adorable. Yeah. Like, if Disney made a Hitler movie, it might actually be really delightful.
Aw.
The little Fuhrer.
Yeah. What about Japan?
What about Japan?
Would they have just got squashed
everybody? I think... Because Japan was pretty imperialistic on their own. I think they would have conquered China for sure because they were already kind of doing that. Like, that's why they were the Axis powers. So, and it's weird because the alliances of World War I were flipped in World War II. Like, in World War I, Japan was actually an allied power and then flipped around. So that might actually be a totally different situation as well.
Yeah.
This didn't actually happen, so I can't give you factual answers to these questions. I can only give you what I think would happen.
You're not a Time Lord?
No. Time Lady.
With Russia in both wars, if I can turn to like a very important historical work, which is the Command and Conquer Red Alert video games. in those games, Einstein goes back and removes Hitler from the time stream. But either way, if you do it, like, Russia just kind of steamrolls all of Europe is the premise of those games.
Command & Conquer is always the one people come to with this argument. Yeah. But that's post-World War I Hitler. Like, if you don't...
That's true.
That's why I'm saying, like, Russia would probably be powerful, but it wouldn't be a communist Russia. It would be a monarchist, czar, Nicholas family Russia, possibly. Rasputin might be fucking some shit up. That's all I'm saying. Like,
and I feel like with both of these, there's so many ways to go. Like, I can't imagine what song gets written if John and Paul and Karen Carpenter sit down. Like, it could be awesome. I have no idea. And also, like, the people developing communism, I think I've read that they were really expecting it would be a super industrial developed country. They were thinking, like, oh, yeah, England, definitely. And then when it was Russia, they were like, oh, you know, it's like all farmland and steppes. And oh, okay, interesting. Like,
yeah, so much of what made Russia do it was that the soldiers on the battlefield were like, wait, why are we fighting the workers of another country while both countries' leaders are like smoking cigars and listening to the Beatles? Like, why is that?
Well, and because all those monarchs you brought up too, like, I love that thing that so many of them were borderline the same family, like all related to Queen Victoria, essentially.
Yeah,
all
they're all
different...
like cousins. So basically, we would have had like this one world government that was like, man, can you imagine if like just a couple countries just had total control of everything? That would be horrifying, wouldn't it?
Fortunately, we'll never have to live in that world. All right, give it up for Riley, you guys. Give it up for Steven. Yeah, I think that's a tie, and tie goes to the new person. So thank you, Steven.
Yeah.
Our next presenter is a hilarious stand-up who has performed on the Oddball Comedy Tour, Outside Lands Festival. She's written for a publication called The New York Times. You can hear her on podcasts like Put Your Hands Together. Please give it up for Caitlin Gill. Welcome.
Hi. Well done, Riley.
Thank you.
Convincing arguments all around. I went for a much more narrow perspective here. I went big by taking it small. That's what I did. I'm trying to find a little balance. I want to go back to one day in 1964. I don't know which day it was, but I don't want you to let that take away from the validity of my argument. I can work out those particular specifics later. I think that's pretty easy to find out. But I want to go back to a day in 1964. I want to go to Western Nevada. Look, not high on my list of destinations normally, but some shit went down. And I think if we went back and fixed it, maybe we could do a little bit better for ourselves, just a little bit better for ourselves. I want to go to the breakfast table of one scientist, one Donald Rusk Curry. Don Curry, if you're nasty. And I'm a nasty woman. And I just want to tell him not to leave his house that day. I'm going to spare him a lot of grief and the world a little bit of misery. Because here is what Don Curry was going to do that day. He was going to leave that house, and he was going to go be a goddamn scientist. He was really good at it. He studied trees. Specifically, he studied the climate by looking at trees. Let's remember, 1964. We hadn't yet touched the moon. We were still going, like, using satellites and going to the space with the fucking pencils. Our computers were punch cards. We weren't, like, no laptops, full rooms. So the idea of looking at the climate was kind of an absurd concept, and the way, not absurd, but it was hard. It was a lot harder. And the way you had to do that was to physically look at old things. You had to find old stuff and then stare at it until you figured out how weather affected it. Don lived an exciting life. So that morning, Don was going to hike into the hills of Western Nevada, and he was going to look at some old stuff and figure out how weather affected it in its past. Now, I think in the 50 years since Don's work was in progress, we've learned that the climate is important to all of us and perhaps an important field of study. Is that, are there any deniers in the room? So he was doing important work. This is valid work worth doing. I don't want to tell Don to stop what he was up to. I just don't want him to do what he did that day. Because here's the thing. The oldest thing that was around where Don was, stop me if you already heard this Radiolab, but baby, I'm going to keep on going. The oldest thing that was in this forest that Don was hiking around in were the trees. And they knew the trees were super old. They knew that some of them were like more than 1,000 years old, like extra old trees. And he's like, that's my moneymaker, baby. I'm going to get all up in that tree, and I'm going to peek inside. And how am I going to peek inside? I'm going to take this badass drill that I ordered from Sweden to do my... I'm Don now. That I ordered from Sweden to do my work, and I'm going to drill into that tree, and I'm going to take a little bit. It's a little biopsy. It's an outpatient procedure. The tree will be just fine. You take a little snippet of tree from the inside, you bore in, and then you pull out a core, and then you count all the rings in the core, and then you see how big and small some are, and you figure out what happened in the weather, and you thought, this is going to be great. I'm in advanced science. What could possibly go wrong? Oh, shit, my drill broke. Oh, wait, I broke it again. Two incredibly long, very expensive, specialized drill bits. You can't even Amazon these now. Like, they're still rare and hard to get. It's not like there's a huge market for, can I have a very thin, maybe 28-inch long, incredibly sharp drill bit that only fits on the end of my specialized old tree drill? Do you have that in stock right now? He was super worried about losing these drill bits within the tree. The tree would be fine. He would not. And his work on climate and trees themselves would have to wait another year to continue. And in 1964 to now, we can't waste any fucking time figuring out what's going on with our climate. So he thought it was important to get the bits out of the tree. He finds a forest ranger. Hey, forest ranger, what do I do? And the forest ranger, or Don, this is in dispute, says, hey, no biggie, look around, hella trees. We got lots of these trees. You want to take a look inside anyway? No big deal. We cut it down. We get your drill bit out. You can take a peek at the tree. We got more of them. Don't worry about it. We're just going to... And they spent the entire day. It took so long. Cutting through this massive old tree. And this is a bristlecone pine. Bristlecone pine. I don't know why. They're only in Brooklyn. So it's a bristlecone pine, and they're gorgeous. They're these gnarled, tall, really bright. They're like glistening in the distance trees. They're very beautiful, very large, and they grow really slow, and they twist around. It looks like you did that thing you're supposed to do with bamboo, where you turn it toward light a quarter turn, and they do that neat swirly thing as they grow. They're gorgeous trees, and they're really not. It takes forever, and they're cutting it down. God damn it, this tree is so hard to cut down. I wonder why this tree is so hard to cut down. And then Don Curry gets a little cross-section, a slab of the tree. He got something new to study. He got his drill bits back. Again, what could go wrong now? He gets back to his office and he starts counting the tree rings. And, oh, there are a lot. He, like, wasn't done counting by the first day. He counted over 1,000 rings the first day. He wasn't done counting for 2 more days. That tree was 4,864 years old. It was the oldest living tree on the planet. Hit pause. That means it's the oldest living organism on the planet. Now, if you're thinking like Caitlin, the quaking aspens in Utah, those are 80,000 years old. You're right. Those are clonal. Those are linked underground. The trees above ground, 130 years old tops. That's a fucking baby. That's a weenus. That ain't got nothing on the motherfucking bristlecone pie. No older tree had been known. No, we had no idea that the trees were that old. We're 1964, pencil, space. We didn't know what we were doing yet. And Don Curry was fucking devastated. The world was devastated. People were super pissed off. This tree was not unknown. We knew it was old. It had a name and an indicator. He had tested 114 trees before that, and they were all just fine. So that tree was something like MX-114. But its real name in everybody's heart was Prometheus. Quick reminder, Prometheus is Greek for forethought. Prometheus means the creator of mankind. Prometheus is the god that gave man fire. We cut down the oldest living thing that we knew to live on the planet. Before you get sad, we figured out by peeking inside a tree without cutting it open that there is a tree older. It's named Methuselah. It's in the same place. You don't get to know where it is. They keep it hidden from us because we are idiots. This isn't the saddest story in the world. Look, all I want to do is go back and tell Don, hey, don't go out today. Go out tomorrow, look at another tree. Go, you maybe don't break your drill bits. You know what Don Curry went on to do? He left his field immediately and continued his scientific career studying salt flats. Do you know what it's literally impossible to kill? A salt flat. There's nothing you can do to it. So you know, just go in, hey, you know what? I'm from the future. You're about to fuck up and kill the oldest living thing on the planet named Prometheus. Maybe go start learning about salt flats right now. Spare yourself a lot of misery. There's a really embarrassing Nova interview that you're going to have to do in the early 80s, and I want to spare you that. Why is this important? Listen, Riley, I love that you went for a big world event. Big world events are important to change, but big world events happen because large forces push farther and farther in. They push harder and harder, squeezing individuals closer and closer together until one just pops out on the other side of it. But forces just keep pushing. Patterns just keep happening. If Hitler hadn't gotten rejected, if we didn't have Hitler, there would have been some other wormy guy with one ball who got rejected from art school and had issues with his mixed parentage. You know what I mean? All of those factors weren't unique. They're all going to come together again. World War I is such a 2-2 is such a crazy example, because look at a guy like Fitz Haber, who in World War I was super enthusiastic about making chlorine gas and killing everybody. Am I quoting another Radiolab? Fuck yes, I am. And killing everybody. And then went on to make nitrogen fertilizer by grabbing ammonia out of the air, feeding all of Europe, saving everyone from starvation so we had enough people to kill in World War II. And then in World War II, family goes to camps, the same gas he used on soldiers, he was a German, same gas he used on other soldiers, was used to kill his family in camps. It's really a fucked up, twisted story, but a guy like that proves that no matter where you are, if you exist in that point in history, you are being funneled toward an inevitable outcome through forces that are bigger than one person can go back and control. I just want to save one guy and one tree. It's the oldest tree. It existed before and after all the mistakes we could go back and fix. You know what I'm saying? No matter where you went in human history, Prometheus was there for that fuck up. It'd be there for the next fuck up. It could be there to see us through all the rest of our fuck ups. And maybe we'll get to some point in our future where we can take a laser, poke it at a tree, and see the cure for every disease we've ever had. And those are the fucking trees that hold the secrets. I just want Prometheus back. This one's for Don.
I think, am I quoting another Radiolab? Fuck yes, I am, should be the new name of our podcast.
That's what all of my dinner parties are called.
I mean, I definitely got my entire source of information from Dan Carlin, so I don't feel like it's a weird thing to do.
I noticed that when you said meat grinder.
He invented that term.
I love that both of you pick things that are very timing-based and are very distracting somebody. But both of you want to go back in time and be a hassle. To somebody, you know what I mean? You want to be that guy in Groundhog Day who keeps interrupting Bill Murray on the street and asking him
Ned
about
Ryerson?
Stuff in order to save the world, you know? Ned Ryerson, right, yeah.
Needle Nose Ned? Ned the Head?
Steven Tobolowsky? Can I just concede and not even go to audience vote for this? Because I want Caitlin to stay up here.
Okay.
I think that was brilliant. I like that you took...
Thank you.
Part of why I was so torn on this topic, besides the aforementioned not wanting to be killed in the past,
sure.
was that...
You and me both, sister.
Yeah, exactly. I feel the whole thing is if you change World War I, all the things that happened could fuck up the world completely. I could have come back to a world with nuclear waste everywhere, because what if some country just randomly bombed two cities for no reason?
Sure.
But your thing is not only do you save a tree, which it might not really affect the timeline at all, except for one guy's life might be way, way better, and also we just have this tree still.
Yeah.
So I think that's the best way to use time travel, I think, is just to make one small change that can make the world a little bit better. Because maybe this guy could also then go on, maybe he keeps studying trees instead of killing them and salt flats, and then maybe he helps us with the climate problem now.
That's I like him. He was a good egg. He was out there doing research that we're still doing, and he honestly didn't believe that cutting down that tree would be of significance. And what's weird is if the tree was 1,000 years old, we'd be that's weird, but okay. It's not 1,000. It's fucking 4,860 goddamn four. It's too old. It crossed the line. It's too old. You can't cut it down.
And at the same time, I do if there's some way that somehow, if we let that tree live, it turns evil. I don't know what it is.
Right.
But
that tree caused World War III.
Just somehow.
That tree drops apples on Jews.
We fucking deserve it. That tree has been plotting for over 4,000 years. We're going to lose anyway.
It's
lying
in wait.
Take it, tree. We're trying to get to space with pencils.
Its plans are well rooted.
Yeah. Oh, that was good. Yeah.
Just for us. Nobody else liked it but you and I.
I was really happy about that. Should really branch out in your humor away from puns, I think.
Hey, leave me alone.
I was going for that. Don't bark up this tree, girl. I tell you. She's shady. Nobody shady.
Yes. I liked it. Just you and me, Kate. We're in this together.
So are you really conceited?
I am. I want to see her. Yeah.
Give it up for Riley, you guys.
Come on.
Our next guest has worked for shows like Review and Key and Peele. He's appeared at SF Sketchfest, the Laughing Skull Comedy Festival. Please give it up for Blake Wexler. Hi, Blake.
Hi, thank you for having me. So my topic, if I could go back in time, I would go back to the moment right before the senseless, indefensible assassination of Osama bin Laden. And I would prevent, I'm just kidding, it's not my subject, sorry. What if, too early in the morning for those jokes, huh? What time is it? The sun's still out. No, that's not, what if it was though? Sorry, that was, I misjudged my audience. I'm a professional and I'll move on. So the real thing that I'm gonna speak about, not that, is I got me. So I would go back like right before General William Tecumseh Sherman invaded the South and burnt the whole goddamn thing to the ground. I would go back, I would pose as Lincoln's chief of staff, and I would sit him down and mellow him out a little bit because he overdid it. He overdid it. Because we had to hang out with those guys afterwards. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like, all right, fuck you, I'm out of here. It's just like, oh, they're at the same dinner party, and I burnt their house down. This is bad. This is awkward. This is a little awkward. So I would do that. And first of all, I think the main problem here, it would be a two-pronged approach. I would mellow him out eventually, but first I would actually learn what he was going to do, because Lincoln was just like, ah, I trust you, just go ahead. And that's a problem, because William Tecumseh Sherman, you should never, just as a rule of thumb, trust a white guy with a Native American middle name. Like, you gotta keep an eye on him. There's always some unresolved issue there. So first of all, that's my rule of thumb, never trust that shit. And then, second of all, is it second or is it eighth of all by now? So basically, I'd hear like what the hell he was going to do. So first I would be like, all right, so if you had to have like one thesis statement, William, for your entire invasion, what would it be? And he'd be like, I'm going to make the South howl. And I'd be like, oh, like a dog, like petting it? No, like a hurt dog that I squeezed its ears. It's like, oh yeah, we can't do that. No. Let's not make Georgia howl. It's a little heavy-handed. So that would be a big red flag. I'm going to make it howl. And then next, he did a thing where he's like, oh, I'm going to wrap railroad tracks after heating them up around trees and call them Sherman's neckties. And I'd be like, oh, that sounds like a sweet art installation, you know, for the South. Add a little art and culture. That's pretty good. You know, he's like, no, I'd do it so rail cars carrying rations and food for women and children careen off the tracks and crash and burn. I'd be like, yeah, no, not that. Not that either. We can't starve women and children to death. So those were two big ones. Fuck. And then next, I would comfort the guy, because the war path, it's very uncomfortable. You got to mellow someone out. He was a very, very high-strung man. I would give his horse Dr. Scholl's inserts, so it would be an easier trot on him, you know, because it could fuck up your back. Wool's a bitch. I would replace wool uniforms with, like, that microfiber cloth that you use on your glasses. How comfortable would that be to wear? Are you nuts? Give that to him. You'll be skipping around. Skipping around. Should we burn down Columbia, South Carolina? Oh, let him go. Let him go. Yeah, give him a couple candles, you know, like maybe a hot washcloth for his face. For his face and also the back of his neck. Have you ever done that? That's nice. So I would do those. And I would give him like a nice fluffy comfort animal, like a nice fluffy Bichon Frise. I would give him a little Bichon Frise, you know, like that's good to pet. And then I think those were my main things on that. Oh, and also I think we were talking about why, like, I started going through this big thing, like, you know, like, oh, I would definitely go back to the South. And I'm like, wait, fuck, what year, what time of year? And it is November and December, so I would still do it, but I was ready to throw away this entire goddamn topic. If it was, I put like an hour, believe it or not, I put an hour of work into this. And I'm like, throw that away. I ain't going back to that time. And then I do want to talk about the Disney thing, unless you guys have...
No.
Okay. No, God, no. So for Disney, when I was a little kid, I loved Goofy. Like, I thought he was really, really funny and humble and down to earth. I was obsessed with Goofy. So when I was like six through, I think like eight, I would walk around sometimes with like my front teeth sticking over my bottom lip so I would look cool. And... Which is a goddamn tragedy, because I have, on my mother's side, amazing bone structure. So I was like, oh, this kid, he could be a cute little kid, but no, it's just a little ugly fucking weird kid. Just like, It was like, oh, a mole child. That's not good for morale for in a class. All right, anyway, I think that's it. I'm Blake. Thanks so much for listening.
Thanks, yeah. Blake.
Yeah.
Give it up for Caitlin.
Yeah. You're right.
Like, this whole time you had the chance to go back and tell yourself to just pull your lip over your teeth. That could have been that was definitely an option. Just run up to little Blake, like, hey, everything's going to be fine. You're pretty cool. You do podcasts at noon in a hotel banquet room.
Right, right. Cut that shit
out.
But
all you got to do, man, just get that lip over those teeth. Yeah, not going to change much, but it's going to make everything for everybody else less awkward right now.
I feel like it gave me depth. I think it gave me a lot of depth.
That's true. That's true. We need this texture to your character.
I think so.
You know what? I don't want to take it away from you. I'm glad you suffered that.
Thank you.
It made you beautiful now.
Aw. As are you.
Oh, come on.
And you guys, a couple of sevens. No, hey, come back.
I'll take seven. Shit. Give it up for Blake, you guys. Our final performer has appeared on BBC's 2 and 3, channels 4 and 5. He was nominated for 2016's Best Comedy Show at Edinburgh. Please give it up for Eric Lampaire.
Hello. Yeah, got a British accent, which means that everything I say sounds more educated. Hello. Now hear this festival. Not in the past, not in the future, but now. Hear it now. Going on last means that everybody else has discussed most elements of what I wrote. So I would probably use a time travel machine to go back to this morning and go on first. I think that would fucking help it out. When I was asked where I would travel to in time, and I could only have one, there was a cornucopia of different choices, noble possibilities. I wouldn't kill baby Hitler. I would just kidnap him and put him in a Jewish orphanage. he would have a much better life. I'd help Guy Fawkes out to blow British Parliament, be Joan of Arc's lawyer, so she wouldn't burn at the stake three times. I would cut the sentence down to just the one burning. Drown Brock Turner the first time he steps in a pool. That would be nice. I would have brunch with the American forefathers and tell them that maybe the Second Amendment just needs a tiny little rewrite because it very much gets out of hand in the near future, guys. Evacuate Nagasaki and Hiroshima, but then I thought I'd just give the Enola Gay a flat tire. So just, I think that would help it out. Free Nelson Mandela just a little bit earlier, maybe 10 years. You know, teach him a lesson, nonetheless, but not 25. That's too long.
That's the most British fucking thing I've ever heard.
He needs to know what he's done, okay? Give Christopher Columbus a map to India. Tell Genghis Khan to just chill out. He killed a lot of people. Give every Michael Bay film to Christopher Nolan or Quentin Tarantino. I think the world needs that. Capture that one dangerous butterfly that's creating all those hurricanes. Why is no one talking about the real criminal here? That darn butterfly. Track whichever human first contemplated its existence and give him or her all the information that we now have about the universe, evolution, consciousness, DNA, so we could advance as a race in a slightly more peaceful way. Now, these are all worthy, but according to chaos theory, any small change would create a different scenario, maybe a worse one. And I know that chaos theory in this podcast is like not a thing, but it is a thing! I can't ignore chaos! Okay? I have to talk about the fucking butterfly! Like, Tarantino making Transformers would be so much better. It would, but then Michael would get his little grubby hands on the Marvel movies or Star Wars, and we just don't need this right now. So I decided to keep things a bit smaller, so I wouldn't disturb the surroundings. A selfie with a Stegosaurus, a selfie at a bloody Roman gladiator game, a selfie with Marilyn Monroe, a selfie with Mount Etna when it erupted, and then I just thought, nobody's going to believe me, that could just be photoshopped. And I just didn't know where I could travel to if I had one. Just one shot. There's an endless opportunity of anywhere I could go. So I just thought, okay, where could I go? I could go to the Jurassic period and leave some of my DNA in resin. And so when InGen finds the fossilized amber, they can make a whole park full of me's. And I would then finally find out if I move in herds. I don't know. I'm only with me. I need at least 5 to know if we move together. I don't think we would. I'm too annoying. Oh, fuck off, Eric. No, you fuck off. All right, and we'd all move in separate directions. I would I would maybe travel at the beginning of arguments I have with my wife. So when she says, I never said that, like 2 minutes into the argument, I could go back in time, record us having the argument, right? And then I could go back to the future and be like, fuck you! But that would cause another argument. Oh, silly me. So, can't do that. I would sneak on Saturn V rocket before launch. So when Armstrong and Aldrin land on the moon, I could step out first and steal his first step and change the history books. So when in class, they would go, and what did Eric Lampere say when he first stepped on the moon? Miss, I know. Yes, Rebecca? He said, it's one small step for me, bitch. Fuck you, Neil. Boom. And then he wrote his name in moon dust using his urine. And the moon would be mine. And then I realized, that's where it hit me. Great, Scott. I realized that the Earth wasn't the only place I could go to. To travel in time, you'd also have to travel in space, okay? One cannot be done without the other, okay? The Earth revolves around the Sun at speed of 18.5 miles a second, or 30 kilometers a second if you're an immigrant, okay? And the Sun also travels around the center of the galaxy, and all the galaxies are being pushed apart in all sorts of directions by dark energy, which means that if you were to travel back at the beginning of me saying hello, beginning of this, you would be at the correct time, but you wouldn't hear me saying hello because you'd be in space, in the vacuum of space where you would suffocate, freeze, and where no one can hear you scream. And so you'd have to travel in space-time. Okay, so then theoretically, if you travel in time, you can travel in space. Therefore, you can go anywhere in the universe. Fuck Earth! I would go somewhere else. I would travel to the Eagle Nebula, which is 7,000 light years away. And with a telescope strong enough, I could point it towards Earth and watch the Neolithic Revolution happen. But then I can hear you go, well, just travel back in time on Earth. Yes, but then I would watch Earth, and then I'd also have a really good view of, like, stars really close by. You know, that'd be nice. I thought, okay, so perhaps I could help the world by looking for extraterrestrial life. Mars 4 billion years ago was rich with greenery and atmosphere, and maybe there was life there. And maybe I was like, oh, leave a little gift there to be found by humans. Elon Musk, he's going to go there soon, isn't he? I could leave him a little tiny gift to say thank you for all the hard work you've done, Elon. Right? But this is when it struck me. What I would do is, when nobody had their telescope pointed on Mars, okay, let's say about 100 years ago, when the landscape was still the same as today, I would travel there, and using the information I have today of Curiosity, the NASA rover, I would know exactly where it goes and when. So I would plant something for it to find. So when it takes the first color image of the Martian landscape on August 6, 2012, it would take a picture, and it would see, planted in the ground, a picture of me naked. And it would freak everybody out! NASA would lose their mind. The whole planet would be like, why is there a naked dude on Mars? Including the past version of me, right? I would be freaking out because I don't know the future me did this. I didn't know the future me did this. So I'd be like, what the fuck is going on? And the thing is, I actually had a really rough year in 2012. So it would actually cheer me up. I kind of needed this. And both me's would have a great time. Past me would be on an adventure to figure out the fuck is going on, and then future me would go back to when I traveled originally, and I would watch YouTube videos of past me doing TV interviews and presenters going, so why is there a picture of you naked on Mars? And I'd be like, I have no idea. And that would be very fun to watch me squirm. But then the embarrassment and confusion of being the naked Mars guy would then sway me on a different path, and I may never get the chance to go back in time and plant that picture of me anyway. So could it even happen? Would the universe allow it? It's the grandfather paradox all over again, but just much weirder. So in the end, I just decided to go back to when I received an email asking whether I wanted to do an episode of Cracked about time travel, and I would kindly reply, no thanks. That's me.
By myself to a very crowded place. I was looking for someone who had lines in her face. I found her there, but she was past all concern.
Hey guys, we're listening to Lady Midnight by Leonard Cohen. Two non-hip-hop songs this week. We're turning into NPR. But there were extenuating circumstances, unfortunately, because Leonard Cohen died this week. This is one of my favorite songs by him, favorite songs, period. He also wrote Hallelujah. If you haven't heard the version of that song by Rufus Wainwright, you have misspent your life. I'll put it in the Spotify playlist for you guys. Oh yeah, I always forget to say this, but we do have a Spotify playlist where all the songs, or almost all the songs we play here, appear. Just search Cracked Podcast in Spotify. I get a lot of questions about the titles of songs and who sings them that I don't have time to answer or figure out which song you're talking about, but please do check out our Spotify playlist. It has the answers you're looking for. Anyways, Leonard Cohen was a great artist, prolific, great songwriter. This song always seemed to me to be about some spiritual passage, kind of reminding me of death, and I hope you enjoy it. On to some brief footnotes. As always, we will link off to the Twitter handles of all of our guests, including Alex Schmidt. We will be linking off to a biography and short documentary about the assassination of Franz Ferdinand. We'll link off to a Smithsonian article called How One Man Accidentally Killed the Oldest Tree Ever. And let's also throw in that Radiolab episode, which is pretty incredible. And we will finally link off to the Google Books of William Tecumseh Sherman's biography. And yeah, hope you enjoy all of that. Read the entire biography. And that's going to do it for this week's episode. Thanks again to Alex Schmidt, Stephen Wilbur, Riley Silverman, Caitlin Gill, Blake Wexler, and Eric Lampere. And of course, engineer Brett, who you can follow at Brett, R-A-D-E-R. You can follow me at Jack_O-B-R-I-E-N. And we'll be back next week with more podcast. Talk to you then.
And she pointed at me where I kneeled on her floor. She said, don't try to use me. Or slyly refuse me. Just win me or lose me. It is this that the darkness is for. I cried, oh Lady Midnight, I fear that you grow old. The stars eat your body and the wind makes you cold. If we cry now, she said, it will just be ignored. So I walk through the morning, sweet early morning. I could hear my lady calling. You've won me, you've won me, my lord. You've won me, you've won me, my lord. Yes, you've won me, you've won me, my lord. Ah, you've won me, you've won me.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to this episode. Hope you liked it. Hope you liked that Leonard Cohen song. If you're trying to decide what podcast to listen to next, I'd recommend Secrets, Crimes, and Audio Tape. Secret Crimes and Audio Tape is an audio drama told week after week, and last week's episode was a twisted comedy about Serial Season 1. However, unlike Serial Season 1, there's actually some resolution at the end in your face, Sarah Koenig. So check out Secrets, Crimes, and Audio Tape on iTunes, Stitcher, Wondery, or wherever you get your podcasts.
In 1962, a mysterious strangler committed the first of 13 random murders, shocking Boston and the world.
Who were these women, and why would anyone want to kill them?
It was the largest manhunt in the city's history.
What is Mary Sullivan's picture doing on the front page of the paper with the Boston Strangler?
50 years later, the cases remain open. Stranglers, the new crime series from Earwolf. Subscribe now in iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Adam Sachs, and Chris Bannon. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.